top of the hour news. As it happens, when it happens, wherever it happens. Local, regional, and global. Only on Q95, the big station. Q95DA.com. Right on cue.
This is the Midday News for Wednesday, May 24. In the headlines, Roseau Bayfront Vendors Association president revealed in an exclusive interview with Q95 that following a meeting with the authorities, vendors were told to vacate the Bayfront by May 26. Antigua government authorizes the use of Liat 1974 limited aircrafts to help airlift medical personnel and injured students from Guyana. And NAACP issued a travel advisory to Florida, saying it is openly hostile to what African Americans, people of color, and LGBTQ individuals. The news is brought to you compliments, Courts Dominica Limited.
Your vision is our mission at Courts Optical. Shop today for up to 25% off. And with Ready Finance, pay nothing for 30 days. Book your free eye examination appointment online at www.kurtsoptical.com. Your vision is our mission. Up to 25% off your completed eyewear. Only at Courts Optical. Value you can see. Conditions apply. See in store for details.
In an exclusive interview with Q95 journalist Matt Peltier earlier this week, President of the Bayfront Vendors Association, Roy Romaine, revealed that after a meeting with the relevant officials from the Discover Dominica Authority, the Minister of Tourism and others, they were given until May 26 to vacate the Bayfront area where they currently sell a variety of goods. He continued by saying that they had inquired of the authorities as to whether they would be stationed in another region in response to the request to leave the area. According to Romaine, based on what is being said, the reason they are being asked to leave is because there are individuals selected to occupy the positions.
I'm the president of the Bayfront Vendors Association. At a meeting I attended myself and five other members of the executive with the PS of the Ministry of Tourism, there was someone from the Discover Dominica Authority and another person from the ministry, I can't remember the ministry at the moment, but at the meeting we were told that we have to vacate the Bayfront by the 26th of this month. And we were asking, well, where are we going to go? Because I mean, if you want us to move from here, then you must have somewhere to put us. And we also let them know that we cannot leave where we're making some money for ourselves and go somewhere we cannot make anything for ourselves. I mean, that is totally inhumane for a thing that happened to us. So we are sort of in limbo, for real. We are limbo. And so I'm also being told, we're hearing that one of the reasons why they want us to move from here is because there are plans for other persons to occupy where we are right now.
During the meeting, Romaine noted that the proposal was put forth regarding the necessity for the Ministry of Tourism to hold a meeting with the complete body of Vendors Association to deliberate on the plans for the Bayfront. However, effective execution of this proposal is still pending.
With the meeting we had with the PS and so, we told the PS, those of us who were present with her, that you need to meet the entire body to discuss your plans for the Bayfront. Up to now, that hasn't taken place yet. As a matter of fact, what we understood that they were calling members of the Bayfront Vendors Association vendors by tens. And we have never had any type of meeting in that regard before. It's always the entire body, you meet with the entire body to discuss what's happening. And here it is, for that occasion, they are being called by tens, which we define very fishy. I mean, that we never, as I said, we have never had meetings in that and from before. So up to now, we have not, from the meeting we've had with the executive, we have not, they haven't met with the entire body as what plans, actual plans, concrete plans they have for us. So as you just said, we are in limbo as to what's happening. And I mean, look now, the season is closed, and that's what we do as a living, for a living, vending. We have worked, many of us have over 20 years working in vending trade. Some of us 26, some more than that, you know? And here it is, we have worked so hard, we were called so many names, we were ridiculed, we were laughed at, we were abused from past people, you know, in society. Even once we were even taken to court for vending in Loveland, and we won our case.
Roy Romaine, president of the Bayfront Vendors Association. Eating or drinking too close to surgery involving general anesthesia may result in your surgery being postponed. This is because undigested food in your digestive tract can cause complications like vomiting and aspiration when food comes up into the esophagus and lungs. Trauma surgeon Dr. Dale Dangleben explains that eating before surgery puts the patient at a risk for aspiration, highlighting that there have also been several lawsuits in that regard. Additionally, Dr. Dangleben stresses the importance of following preoperative instructions provided by the medical team.
Put you at risk during intubation for aspiration. You know, there's been several lawsuits in that regard. You know, patient aspirated, developed pneumonia or acute pneumonitis, and ends up, you know, dying from these things. So again, to reduce the incidence, this intraoperative or postoperative incidence, you have to have these rules. Although based on the type of medications that you're taking, you can say, hey, the morning of, you know, you can have your beta blocker with a sip of water, or it can be done under supervision in the holding area. But anesthesia is the stickler for this. You will not proceed with the case if you've eaten after midnight. And I think it has to do with having food in your stomach, and upon, you know, induction, intubating, vomit just comes all the way up into your passive vocal cords.
By working together with the medical team and following these guidelines, patients can help ensure a safe and successful surgical experience. Dangleben also notes that post-operative care is equally important in reducing complications and promoting healing, as everyone comes out of anesthesia differently. Patients should follow instructions for care, medication management, and physical activity to aid in their recovery. Overall, by adhering to pre- and post-operative guidelines and working closely with their medical team, patients can minimize the risks associated with surgery and achieve optimal outcome.
The post-op part, I think, is really you coming out of anesthesia. Everybody comes out of anesthesia different. I think that has to do with the threshold in terms of the type of medications that you've taken in the past. Some people are medication naive, and some people, you know, some people you give them 25 of fentanyl and they're out. So everyone's a little different. Mm-hmm. So when you wake up, you want to make sure that you have all your faculties. You've seen the YouTube videos of, you know, people coming up from anesthesia in the car driving home. People are still confused. Mm-hmm. So there is risk with that post-anesthesia. You want to make sure that's out of your system. You know, usually if you stay inpatient, we do a post-operative check on these patients, right? We go through all the systems and make sure that they're okay. And then we say, okay, we'll start with clear liquids and then, you know, or sips of clears and things like that, and then go from there. So that is why we do that. Somebody might just wake up and be fine and, you know, GCS of 15 and, okay, no risk. You say, okay, let's give them some crackers and a cup of juice and send them home. So I think, again, a lot of this has to do with medical, legal issues and liability.
Trauma surgeon Dr. Dale Dangleben. The unveiling of a Calypso board took place at the Calypso House on the weekend with several names of Calypsonians from 1957 to present inscribed on there. The project was led by Avis Talbot of the UN Development Program. She saluted them for their talent and persistence and for bringing joy to the life of many.
Lady Calypsonians, a special word to you. You have made your mark, and I look forward to seeing many more of your names on this board. There are another 33 years of space left here, and they are for you. To all Calypsonians and writers, I thank you for bringing joy, laughter, and truth into my life. Your voices and words touch many more than you can imagine. So please be mindful as you continue, and let us all ensure that this art form is never silenced, tainted, or abused. This humble gift to you is only a thank you for your gifts to me and to many others.
Avis Talbot of the UNDP. Tourism Minister Denise Charles claims she wants to ensure that vendors have the best opportunity to sell their products and that anything her ministry recommends or does is for their well-being. She says the vendors' arcade designs are currently under review and will improve services offered as well as the customer experience. She says the Bayfront is not a permanent dwelling home, but the vendors' arcade will be.
Because that is what is making a difference, where if people decide to stop and shop, is the whole experience. And we feel that the Bayfront is not a permanent home. And that is why we are focused on building this vendor's Arcade, which will be a permanent dwelling place for our vendors. And then we'll have restaurants there. We will have a platform for music, live music, entertainment. And so I think that is the best solution for our current situation right now, to have this permanent structure that can house all our vendors. So all visitors to Dominica, whether you come by cruise, whether you come by air, whether you come by ferry, that you go to these vendors' arcade and you can shop. Actually, we have a design for it. We are reviewing the design, and the plan is to have a consultation with the vendors, because we need their input. We need to know their vision, how they see, if they like this, if they like don't like that. And so they will have an opportunity to give their input into the design. So we started some consultation with them, and so we'll continue those consultations. Once we have finalized the draft designs, it will be presented to them. Once they've given their input, then we will have the final designs, and then we want to go to construction very quickly.
Tourism Minister Denise Charles. The Project Implementation Unit, PIU, of the Emergency Agricultural and Climate Resilience Project announces that livestock farmers from the 6 remaining agricultural regions are in the process of receiving their packages from the World Bank-funded project. Information Officer at the Ministry of Agriculture, Petra Grell Schillingford, highlighted that the projected number of approved farmers has increased to 217, and those who were awarded contracts will receive further assistance. However, some farmers have been reluctant to come in to engage and have their contract signed, and this will cause setbacks for these farmers as the project seeks to undertake direct delivery from supplier to beneficiary.
The Project Implementation Unit of the Emergency Agricultural Livelihoods and Climate Resilience Project, we are pleased to announce that after several setbacks, livestock farmers from the 6 remaining agricultural regions are in the process of receiving their packages from the World Bank-funded project. Initially, 200 farmers would have been approved. This projected number has increased to 217 farmers, and those will be awarded contracts and receive further assistance. Except for the Northeast Agricultural Region, the livestock farmers in that region, a total of 30 of them, have all completed all necessary transactions with the project. Within this new cycle, 94 farmers have already signed contracts, 30 are awaiting clearance from the Environmental Health Department, and 38 have not responded to our notices or calls. With the 30 awaiting the Environmental Health Certificates, we are working with these farmers and the Environmental Health Department, as this is a necessary step within all World Bank procedures, that is for environmental and social safeguards within project implementation.
The PIU is urging farmers to visit the office to sign their contracts. The livestock component of the project will be starting this week and be engaged in disbursement and delivery of materials and supplies for the restoration of animal housing and structures damaged during Hurricane Maria.
Therefore, the 38 approved farmers, you are urged to visit us or call the office at the soonest possible time, as this will affect delivery of materials, which is scheduled to commence later this week. And without your contracts, these materials will not be delivered or disbursed. This will negatively affect the project, as it's another cause for delay. So once again, we are urging livestock farmers around the island, if you have not contacted us, if you've not signed your contracts with the project implementation unit, we are urging you to do so at the soonest possible time. We are located on the King George Street, that is in Roseau, the former First Domestic Building, and we can be contacted via telephone number 266-3998. You can feel free to visit the farmer service centers in your region or speak with your livestock development officer or extension officer for further information.
Petra Grell-Schillingford. The Dominica State College has proudly declared the prosperous execution of its yearly business for a day occasion. Over the course of a decade, the college has offered small business management courses a chance to acquire practical expertise in managing their enterprises on the college campus. According to Melinda Serafin, who serves as both an event coordinator and lecturer for the Small Business Management Program, the institution is delighted to have hosted the event. She noted that the participating students were visibly excited, particularly during the brainstorming process for the event's concepts. Despite the profits earned, the participants departed from the occasion with a feeling of achievement and delight.
We recently hosted our annual Business for a Day event. For about 10 years, we have offered small business management classes the opportunity to gain first-hand experience running their business ventures on campus. This event allows students to be evaluated on practical skills in addition to traditional tests and exams. Melinda Serafin, our event coordinator and lecturer of the Small Business Management Program, said, and I quote, "We're thrilled to announce the success of our free-day Business for a Day event. The enthusiasm from the participating students was palpable, especially when they settled on ideas for the event. Participants left the event with a sense of accomplishment and joy, regardless of the profits made. We're incredibly proud of our students and look forward to future events," end quote.
The curriculum is reportedly intended to educate the fundamentals of business management, including marketing, finance, and running a small business, as well as to emphasize life skills to students.
The program is designed to teach business management basics, such as marketing, finance, and managing a small firm. It also focuses on essential life skills, such as teamwork, compromise, organization, time management, and shared responsibility. The goal is to foster an environment where students can learn how to work together to succeed in any business venture they may embark upon after graduation. Students participating in this year's event described it as, and I quote, "an incredibly rewarding experience," end quote. And, a quote again, "a great way to develop confidence in our business acumen," end quote. Many commented that it gave them insight into what it takes to run a successful business venture, while also learning valuable lessons about teamwork and communication skills. Overall, our Business for a Day event was an overwhelming success. The enthusiasm from participants was undeniable throughout the entire process, from idea generation to implementation, making it one of the most memorable experiences yet.
And that was Monelle Alexis, DSC Public Relations and Student Recruitment Officer. 224 cruise calls are said to be projected for 2023-2024, with an estimated 4,000 passengers expected on board. Tourism Minister Denise Charles claims Dominica has surpassed the pre-COVID levels due to good relationships built through networking and marketing the island. She added that Dominica came to the support of many islands who required COVID vaccines, but did not reveal the average amount spent per visitor or any details of plans for a cruise village.
"We are one of the countries that work very closely with our cruise partners. We were planning to have an early restart, and we were actually one of the destinations that opened our ports earlier and allowed a restart of cruise tourism. So because of that relationship, we strengthened during the COVID period. I will backtrack and also tell you that we supported some of our cruise partners by providing vaccines. They were short on vaccines for their crew, and they reached out to us, and we supplied them with vaccines. So whilst people in Dominica were hesitant to take vaccines, and we had a lot in supply, we supported them. And that made a remarkable difference, because you are recognizing in the time of need, and your partner is going for a challenge, you are there to support them. So that echoed throughout the industry, that they made sure everybody knew how well Dominica had worked with them during the pandemic period. And we saw that in the 2021-2022, we had 206 calls, which was much higher than the 143 received in 2019.
Tourism Minister Denise Charles and Dominica's President Charles Savara claims that perhaps the biggest challenge facing the Caribbean today is the current situation in Haiti. He contends that Dominica is particularly concerned by the complete breakdown of governance in Haiti and the prevalence of gang violence, which renders normal life nearly impossible. He urged a new Russian ambassador to Dominica to help persuade the Russian Federation to come to Haiti's assistance when he presented his credentials to Dominica this week.
"Haiti is a country which was once the wealthiest colony in the Americas. It is now the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere as a result of a series of man-made and natural disasters and neglect which has befallen that country for several decades. As a permanent member of the Security Council, the Russian Federation can play an important role in getting the international community to focus attention on the plight of the Haitian people by causing the Security Council, in collaboration with the many organs of the UN system and individual member states, to devise a comprehensive plan of action to to achieve the overall transformation of Haiti and commit to the required funding to ensure that 11.8 million people of Haiti can realize the sustainable development goals in all areas.
In other news, the Antigua government has granted authorization for the utilization of aircrafts owned by LIAT's 1974 Limited to promptly proceed to Guyana. Their mission is to assist in airlifting medical personnel and injured students for treatment in Barbados, subsequent to a devastating fire that occurred at a school in Guyana. According to reports, the fire, believed to be an intentional act of arson, claims the lives of 19 students. Allegedly, an individual deliberately set fire to the sleeping quarters where the children were staying, resulting in its complete destruction. In a letter addressed to His Excellency Irfan Ali, the President of Guyana, Prime Minister Gaston Brown conveyed condolences on behalf of the government and people of Antigua and Barbuda. He expressed sympathy to the affected students, their families, and the government and citizens of Guyana. Brown acknowledged the profound grief experienced by the parents and emphasized the need for collective action to provide solace and tranquility during this difficult time. And the NAACP has issued a travel advisory to Florida over the weekend, saying the state is openly hostile to what African Americans, people of color, and LGBTQ individuals. The organization is the third civil rights group to issue a warning for the Sunshine State after a series of decisions by Governor Ron DeSantis' administration. CBS Morning's Mark Strassman reports from Florida.
In Florida, critics sense hostility from Governor Ron DeSantis and his conservative crackdown in the state. The NAACP's new message, beware of traveling to Florida.
Why do you believe that Florida is so hostile to Black Americans?
Well, it's been demonstrated by the governor's action and the policies that have been advanced. And so we want to make sure the rest of America understand the hostility in which he is governing in his quest to become president.
DeSantis, just days away from announcing a bid for the White House, has been solidifying his conservative credentials. He's blocked public high schools from offering an African-American Studies AP course, barred all grades from teaching about gender identity and critical race theory, and signed a ban on abortion after 6 weeks.
We will never, ever surrender to the woke mob.
Is this just politics?
I mean, it certainly is just politics, right? But the problem is that it impacts lives. And so it may take years for us to unwind the damage that has been done here in Florida.
Heather Wilkie leads Zebra Youth. It provides services to LGBTQ teens and young adults in Orlando.
People are so afraid because they've seen these targeted attacks. Look at what happened with Disney.
More backlash from Florida's largest private employer, Disney. The company and DeSantis have feuded ever since Disney opposed a state law critics dubbed Don't Say Gay. Just last week, the company, synonymous with Florida tourism, scrapped plans for a $1 billion new campus in the state.
Disney may have gotten everything they wanted in Florida for the last 60 years, but there's a new sheriff in town now.
And as for the NAACP advisory, a spokesman for DeSantis called it a stunt. And tourism in Florida is up. A record 137 million tourists visited the state last year. For CBS Mornings, I'm Mark Strassman in Orlando.
And that's the news, but first a recap of the headlines. Roseau Bayfront Vendors Association President Roy Romain revealed in an exclusive interview with Q95 that following a meeting with the authorities, vendors were told to vacate the Bayfront by 26 May. Antigua government authorizes the use of LIAT's 1974 limited aircrafts to help airlift medical personnel and injured students from Guyana. An NAACP issued a travel advisory to Florida saying it is openly hostile to what African Americans, people of color, and LGBTQ individuals after a series of decisions by Governor Ron DeSantis' administration. The news is brought to you compliments Courts Dominica Limited. I am Kimberly Benjamin.
Q, top of the hour.